Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, tonight we're focusing on some of the great writers that are going to be in attendance this weekend at the Printers Row Lit Fest, and we save the best for last. Mark Bowden is an award-winning author and writer. He contributes to places like The Atlantic and Vanity Fair. He's written several books in his career, including the 1999 monster hit Black Hawk Down, which chronicled a battle in Mogadishu between U.S. soldiers and Somalia militia. The book was turned into a movie directed by Ridley Scott. And almost 20 years later, Bowden has once again turned his attention to writing about war. His new book is called Hue, 1968, The Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. And it's a gripping piece of nonfiction about not just a horrible battle in the cultural capital of South Vietnam during the Tet Offensive, but it's also about leadership, humanity, and lessons learned, hopefully. The Battle of Hue remains one of the biggest and bloodiest for the American Marines, hundreds killed, thousands wounded, and it defies the stereotype of the war in Vietnam. You know, fought in jungles, and rice paddies, and foxholes. Nope. This was a gruesome battle in a major city, fighting block to block, inch by inch, for 24 days. When it was all said and done, over 10,000 soldiers on both sides and civilians were killed. And because of its startling and sobering results, the images coming home from Hue shook the American people's faith in a war that was ultimately over ideology. Mark Bowden will be speaking tomorrow at 1 o'clock at Jones College Prep Auditorium, and he is my guest for the hour. Mr. Bowden, thanks so much for being my guest tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin.
Tremendous, tremendous book. I've been talking about it on the show for the last, I feel like listeners, the anticipation has grown on this conversation. Just
well,
from
I'm flattered. About. Thank you.
I want to start just by, I mean, what's really great about this book is that you're telling the story of a battle, but you're doing it with so many interviews and vantage points. It's not just the American soldiers or American politicians. You have North Vietnamese soldiers and people that were in Hue who were civilians. Talk about just the process of putting a story like this together.
Well, I'm an old newspaper reporter, you know, and I started writing daily stories for the paper many years ago. And what you learn is the most interesting stuff is on the ground. It's the people who are directly engaged, whatever you're writing about. And in a battle, obviously, it's the combatants who are in the street with rifles, risking their lives, getting wounded, in some cases getting killed. And so I kind of build these stories from the ground up. I go looking for people who were there. And my own understanding of the larger story emerges really out of all of that legwork finding.
So you didn't go in with a thesis of, I'm going to prove how this was the turning point of the Vietnam War. You let the stories sort of speak for themselves as they sort of came up through.
Well, I knew clearly, because I'm old enough, I remember the Tet Offensive and I remember what a huge impact it had in the country. And, you know, obviously one of the reasons you as a writer or a journalist decide to focus on a particular event is you feel it's significant. But I can honestly say that I really had very little understanding or knowledge of the Tet Offensive or of Hue, other than just sort of the general things that you learn. I was 16 when it happened. And also because I grew up during the Vietnam War era, it was a really important thing in my life. I mean, I remember arguing with my dad about the Vietnam War over the dinner table when I was a kid, and neither of us really knew enough to have a strong opinion about it. And I felt like it would be really fascinating for me to do a kind of a deep dive into Vietnam and arrive finally at my own better informed understanding.
I mean, there are books and books that line the shelves of American literary history. There have been movies that have captured Vietnam in different ways. But what I thought striking about this battle was its significance, of course, to the war, but also how it differentiated from it went away from the stereotype of what we know of the Vietnam War, what we've seen in pop culture. I wasn't alive at that time, so you know I'm relying on documentaries or films or books. But this was a different kind of fight. This was an urban landscape fight.
It was, and I think that, you know, for me, I mean, I've read a lot of the books that you mentioned and seen the movies too, but I know, you know, that because I'm lucky enough to do what I do, until I work on something myself, I don't really understand it. And there's something, I mean, if you love to read, which I do, to be able to devote yourself to like 5 or 6 years to writing your own book and arriving at your own understanding and framing that story, I think it's inevitable that you come up with a new way of looking at it, mm-hmm. because, you know, that's really what history is. Ultimately, it's writers who decide to dig deep and try to reach their own understanding.
You know, there's so much in this movie or this book. It's going to be a miniseries at some point. But the idea of the contrasts, and you kind of just mentioned it there, that the idea of how this history is told.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the great things about the book is that you do take time to be objective and listen to the other side. It's not just sort of an American patriot story where you talk to people who fought Marines that were there or generals who directed from Washington. No, you go in and you talk to people who were the young girls who led sort of the original offensive into the city of Hue.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about the idea of getting past just the stories that are available to you and reaching to find the others.
Well, that was one of the real advantages that I had in working on this book. This is really the first book that tells the story of a battle in Vietnam through the eyes of both the Vietnamese and the Americans. And that's partly because it's 50 years later, the country of Vietnam has opened up so that a journalist like myself can go with some freedom and track down people and interview them. I did the same thing when I wrote Black Hawk Down. I went to Somalia and I tried to do the best job I could to understand the Somali point of view. But I was very limited because it's an extremely dangerous place and I could only stay for mm-hmm. a limited amount of time. It was really expensive to hire security but in this case, I mean, I worked on it for 6 years. I hired a fellow in Vietnam who was just fantastic, who did a lot of research and reporting for me. And then I would go over and he would arrange two long weeks of two and three interviews a day. And I would come back and I had only understood maybe 5% of what was said to me because I don't speak Vietnamese.
Right.
But I hired a young woman who translated and transcribed all those interviews. And then I would read them and I'd really see what or hear what people had told
I mean, you
me.
Could tell from the book they're organic stories. They're from the first person. This is a nonfiction piece of work. This is something that, I mean, it's a historical document. In doing that, being in the room and talking to people who probably have not been asked too much about that experience, about being in the Vietnam War, fighting Americans, what was that like? What was it like to hear from people who really have not been heard from before?
Well, I know it was a great experience for them, and you're absolutely right, Justin. Most of them had not ever told their stories before. The sad thing is that I didn't understand it while they were telling me it. So I'm listening to a language I don't completely understand, and I'm getting brief summaries mm-hmm. of what they've said. It was really, for me, when I came home and I was able to read the verbatim transcripts of the stories they were telling
me. Were they emotional about it? I mean, even throughout the – I mean, without understanding the language, were they emotional about
yes.
telling the story?
Yes, some were. Chaiti Mung, who is – you referenced the young village girl who is 18, mm-hmm. Is now, in her late 60s. She rode up on a motorcycle and got off. I was introduced to her daughter, who really wants to come study in the United States. She works as an optometrist. She wow. learned that profession after the war. But remembering back to her youth and to the loss of her good friends who she went to war with, and she herself was wounded in the battle and still has pain from those injuries, she teared up and was very emotional about it. Some of the people like Nguyen Dac Huan, who was a Buddhist and a devout man, but who became a Viet Cong fighter, who got caught up in the purges. He was a propagandist for the Viet Cong. And when they began rounding up people who had worked for the South Right. Vietnamese regime and executing them and marching them off to their deaths, he really, I think it was evident talking to him how ashamed he is of having been a part of that. And I thought it was really very remarkable that he was willing to admit that and speak about it candidly, yeah. which he does. And so I was able to tell that story. So these just incredibly rich stories that if you're a reporter and you've been doing this for a long time, you're going to find if you can find the people who were really there. And your understanding of any event grows and changes when you have the opportunity to do that kind of reporting.
Mark Bowden is the author of Hue 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. He is going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest tomorrow at 1 o'clock at the Jones Auditorium. Michael Phillips is doing the interview. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Mark Bowden, my guest here tonight on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin, my guest in studio tonight, Mark Bowden. He is the author of Hue 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. Also the author of Black Hawk Down and others. He will be at the Printers Row Lit Fest tomorrow at 1 o'clock at Jones Auditorium, Jones High School Auditorium in the South Loop. there's a we kind of talked about that a little bit, you know, and I want to get to the nitty gritty of the of why this was such a story. You know, we know generally about the Tet Offensive. It's a, it'll occupy a page or so in a history book about the Vietnam War and the turning point. Rarely is the Battle of Hue referenced. And I guess what I took away from the book, which was fascinating, is that in the American military wants history to write it as if the Tet Offensive was a failure. And that yes, it, you know, that they tried, but they really weren't organized. They weren't able to put it together. But your account of this battle and what happened here just strikes that right in the face.
Hmm. And also part of that narrative that has become kind of standard is that the military was winning the war and journalists sort of soured everybody on it and journalists lost the war. And I found, you know, in researching of the Battle of Hue, number one, that the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong surprised and shocked the American military. They took that city with almost no
difficulty. I mean, they outmaneuvered American generals.
They amassed 10,000 troops in and around that city without the Americans or the South Vietnamese hearing a whisper of them being there. And over a period of about 7 hours on one morning, they took the third largest city in South Vietnam. That's like some foreign enemy takes Chicago, which I think is the third largest city in America. It was hugely significant that they did this. And, of course, the response of General William Westmoreland and the military command was it didn't happen. It hadn't happened. And Westmoreland pretty much maintained throughout his life, even in his memoirs, that it had been a failure, that they had only a few, like maybe 500 people. He was off by about a factor of 20. Enemy soldiers were there? So it was an enormous coup to take the city. It was just an extraordinary surprise, and it shocked the world. They flew their National Liberation Front flag over the Citadel, which is the big fort that is the northern half of Hue, for nearly a month, and it delivered a shock to the country that really began to change people's attitude toward the war.
It's amazing, and you can't underscore how shocking it was, because the American force in Hue was hundreds at that point. This was the holiday time, so there's some that was a sneak surprise. But the idea that they had amassed the force miles away thinking there was going to be attack across, they weren't surprised at the idea of a Tet Offensive. They just were in the wrong spot.
They were in the wrong spot. And part of that was that Westmoreland's theory was that the Viet Cong were so weak militarily that they could only really mount small-scale attacks in the rural areas of the country, that the cities were pretty much safe. And he was just completely wrong. And, you know, his reaction sort of tells you something about the man. He was so wedded to his theory of things that he basically could not accept that something had happened that toppled his whole notion of what was going on in the country, which is really what Hue was. It was something that just completely undercut Westmoreland's whole understanding of what was going on in South Vietnam.
There's such great stuff in here about the politics around it and LBJ, and we'll get into that as well. But that almost trickled down, because you had commanders in the field who wouldn't believe that so many enemy troops were amassed in Hue, and they would send small outfits of Marines on day trips to Hue they didn't have the right weaponry. They were just going, leave your stuff behind. You're just going to go in and clean them out a little bit, and then they're gone. And they perished. I mean, the first groups that came into Hue, I mean, were killed because if you go up the chain to the incompetence of the generals in Washington.
Sure. So that attitude of Westmoreland's wasn't just a public relations thing. It was something that, as you point out, Justin, lost a lot of American lives. So you would have like a half of a company of Marines, 300 men, told to attack the Citadel, which was occupied by thousands of enemy soldiers who were in entrenched positions
up on
walls,
on the top of buildings.
And they would just get creamed, and losing half of their men, and then retreat and radio back, you know, we couldn't achieve the objective. And they were accused of timidity and cowardice. And then they would be ordered to go back and do it again.
It is maddening when you read that section of the book about how long it took the American military leaders to understand what was happening.
And this is interesting, Justin. The men who were commanding at that low level, who were being ordered to lead their units out and get slaughtered, were young captains and lieutenants at the time. A good number of them retired as brigadier generals in the Marine Corps. And, you know, when I interviewed all of them for this book, and their anger over the way they were employed in the Battle of Hue remains today. And they're completely loyal and devoted to the Marine Corps. I mean, that was their life. But they had powerful stories to tell about what that was like. And I should add that the journalists who went to Hue, like my old editor, Gene Roberts, who was a reporter for The New York Times, were kind of age-wise contemporaries of these young military officers. So they were writing stories mm-hmm. about what was actually happening.
Well, what I want to do is I want to get to that. I want to get – we'll take a break and get tonight's news. And I want to get to the role that the press played because, as you mentioned, the idea that the press lost the war, and that's sort of the that's what we hear over and over in history, the history books or people who are in the military will talk about. It's the people in the press that told the real story of Hue at the time. And it wasn't sort of – you know, fly in by helicopter and from a perch kind of look around. I mean, a lot of press were wounded, were killed, were right in the thick of this.
Decorated, some of them.
I mean, this battle that is just beyond, it's kind of beyond human belief. Some of the gore and just the awesomeness of this battle. Hue 1968, A Turning Point in the American War in Vietnam is the book by Mark Bowden. He is at the Printers Row Lit Fest this weekend. He'll be at the Jones High School Auditorium at 1:00 tomorrow. Michael Phillips will be interviewing him. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on the news. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are we're at the end of our show tonight, which was all about authors who are coming in for the Printers Row Lit Fest. And like I said, we saved the best for last. Mark Bowden, the award-winning author and writer. He is a contributor to Vanity Fair, also The Atlantic, wrote at the Philadelphia Inquirer for years. He has put together a book called Hue 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam, which is getting rave reviews. And it's just an amazing piece of work. Mark will be at the Lit Fest tomorrow in conversation with Michael Phillips at the Jones High School Auditorium. All right, let's pick up the conversation. You know, I mentioned about the press. You know, it's really interesting because Walter Cronkite plays a big role in your story. And I think that that's tremendous because there's so many journalists, like you mentioned, Gene Roberts, others who play. But when you think of Walter Cronkite and the Vietnam War, it's hard to divorce those two entities because of his impact on what happened with the you know, as LBJ once famously said, supposedly, if you lose Walter Cronkite, you lose Middle America.
Yeah.
You know, talk about the press, because there started to be rumblings that something was amiss, what was being told from Washington to the press, the New York Times, Washington Post, other places, of what was happening in Hue was different.
It was. And, you know, I think that, you know, Walter Cronkite, who was the most famous man in America, not just the most famous journalist. His face was recognizable in voice to all of us who I grew up during those years. And, you know, he was an old war correspondent himself. He covered World War II as a radio journalist and as a print journalist. And he had been for several years as the anchorman at CBS delivering reports that were very often crafted from the public relations statements of the military command. And Cronkite, I think, having lived through World War II and the Korean War, sort of grew up in journalism alongside the United States military as this extraordinarily capable, successful force. And it was really, if you look back at the way journalists covered war, they were kind of cheerleading the American forces. And, you know, during World War II and even during the Korean War, you could kind of understand it. Vietnam was a little bit different. And what had happened was, while Cronkite is sitting at his desk in New York, you know, anchoring the nightly news, there are young reporters like David Halberstam and Neil Sheehan and Morley Safer and Dan Rather, actually, who were out in the field in Vietnam. And they were sending back stories that were directly contradicting what the official line was. And Cronkite was aware of this, but he was also a little bit concerned that maybe young journalists were sort of caught up in a cultural moment.
You know, because there was a rising anti-war sentiment in the country.
And there, you know, on college campuses, guys were getting drafted, and so there was a lot of bad feeling in my generation about the war anyway. But when Tet happened, it was so huge and so completely contradicted the stories that he'd been telling on the air. Cronkite was angry, and he felt betrayed. He felt like he had been used by the military to peddle a false story. So he went to Vietnam to see for himself. He put back on his old war correspondent hat. And he traveled to Vietnam, interviewed Westmoreland and others, but actually went to combat zones and went to Hue, which he had been told was completely under American control.
That's, I mean, just to summarize, that they said after the first day, Hue is under control, Tet was a failure, we don't have to worry about it. Our American forces are in control. And on the ground in that moment, it was completely wrong.
And Cronkite, who knew war when he saw it, saw a major war unfolding before his eyes, and he knew that he'd been fed a line, and he was angry about it. So he came back at the end of that tour and fashioned, I think it was a half-hour-long documentary, pulling together a lot of the footage that these younger correspondents had created in their work in Vietnam, but then adding his own insights and commentary. And at the end of that show, he very famously said he did not feel anymore that Vietnam was a war that America could win, that it was a stalemate, that we needed to and essentially from that moment forward, the debate in America was never over whether we could win the war, but how we could get out of the war.
That's
so that
amazing.
Was just the world changed.
Yeah. And,
but let me just say what, Justin, journalists are accused of losing the war in Vietnam. What is true is that journalists changed the way people thought about what was going on in Vietnam. But it really wasn't the journalists. It was the truth. It was people coming back and telling the American people, this is what is really happening here. And that's what changed the attitude.
What I also
war.
Took from it, and there's a lot of lessons in it, and we'll get to the conversation about lessons learned. But, you know, when in conversation with LBJ and Westmoreland and others, there was this sort of hatred or just, I don't know, hatred might be a strong word, but they despised the New York Times and the Washington Post because they were telling they weren't doing the PR that they wanted to. And it's interesting to think years later, 50 years later, that we're in the same kind of situation where Washington and the big papers are at odds.
It's true. And, you know, and I think serious journalism is always at odds with people who are peddling lies and trying to shape a false narrative. And, you know, if you're in the business of trying to figure out what's really going on, that's going to undercut people who are trying to sell you or spin you or convince you that things are other than what they really are. You know, the press, I think, has a really important role to play and always has had in this country. And it's not always a real popular role to play. I think it's become – I'm worried about the press in America today because I think it's become so fragmented that there are – it's very difficult, I think, particularly for young people – to tell the difference between serious reporting and what I call propaganda or salesmanship. And, you know, I think because the lines have blurred, not just, you know, here and there, but whole networks who are that are devoted to propaganda. I think we need serious intelligent journalism today more than ever, and nothing illustrates the importance of it more than this story about Hue.
The book is called Hue, 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. Mark Bowden is my guest. He's the author. You know, one of the striking things of this book was just the violence and the toll it took on the Americans and of course, the North Vietnamese as well. But, I mean, there's so much description and blood and gore. You know, there's one scene where two freelance journalists get off a helicopter and it takes 3 minutes for one of them to be, you know, shrapnel to hit them and to be down.
Right.
There, I mean, it's amazing to think about, especially in this urban environment, when weaponry and technology kind of caught up in the way that you had rounds and rounds and rounds of automatic rifles in Vietnam and rockets and mortars and these sort of going down streets and blowing up buildings and shrapnel ripping people's legs off. I mean, it's striking to me, and it really makes your stomach turn at how violent. I mean, war is violent. There's no doubt. It always has been. But just that scene in Hue, did that surprise you how violent the whole battle was?
I think it's always surprising when you encounter something on that scale. I mean, this just so exceeded any of the conflicts that the American forces had faced in Vietnam when it happened. You know, what frankly really surprised me is that these young Marines kept going. They would see their friends cut down. They would see bodies shredded with machine guns or mortars or shells. And you can only imagine how terrified you would be. And
yet
every day, you know, those who survived would pull themselves together and be ordered to go back out and attack across another street. And every day they did it. And I found, as I interviewed these men who survived for this book, all of their stories end abruptly somewhere in the middle of the battle, because most of them were carried out. You know, they fought until they were wounded and carried, and then their battle was over. The actual battle goes on. So there would have been almost no way to tell this story through, you know, like
one
three or four characters.
Yeah, right.
You really have to, it's like a tag team.
Yeah.
You know, you tell the story up until this guy gets nailed, and then
it's striking because right at the beginning of the book, and I noticed this, and I was talking to Pete about this too, the idea that, you know, you set up some characters right at the top. You know, and you set up letters, and it's great to be able to read in their voice the letters they sent home. And you think of nonfiction or even novels where you're going to follow these characters throughout this battle, like you just said. And you realize quickly with this book that there's not a long shelf life of being in the Battle of Hue. It's so violent, and some of the characters die. Some of them are wounded. Their stories end, and others pick it up. I mean, it is tremendous in the way that, I mean, there are several characters in this book, and there are several ways that they don't finish this battle.
And some made it. I mean, there are a few who were introduced in the beginning who did make it all the way through. In fact, tonight here in Chicago, I'm going to dinner with Andy Weston, who's this one wonderful young Army lieutenant who wrote home every day to his wife what was going on. And I loved Andy's letters. I would ask all these guys when I interviewed them, do you have pictures? Do you have letters? And Andy sent me, he wrote, as I said, just about every day. It's like a diary of his experience until he's wounded.
He's in the Army. He's the one that's pushing towards where, again, it's we have all this conversation now about intelligence.
Right.
But they send the Army to thinking, again, in this weird, hubris way that the American military was thinking, that there'd be, you just need to get to this spot. You don't have to worry about what's in front of you. And they encountered the main command center of the North Vietnamese,
and under
prepared. They didn't have the right things with them.
Right.
Once again, in the same situation where, you know,
and I half a battalion is wiped out,
like,
and
that.
They end up escaping by a daring effort to walk in darkness through enemy lines and somehow get to safety.
And the worst part about that story is when they get to safety, the orders are to go back.
To go back, to go right back. And you know what's fascinating to me was the candor of these men. I mean, they are now my age. They're in their 60s, most of them, some of them a little older. And they have no reason to color their recollections of that battle. And they were disillusioned and angry. And they felt, I think one of them, I remember Carl DeLeo saying at that point, he felt like more was being asked of him than was fair to ask of any human being. And yet more and more and more. He just felt like they're going to keep making me do this until I get killed. And, you know,
that's the feeling of the book.
But, you know,
yeah,
these guys kept doing it. But believe me, not all of them were terribly happy about the way they were being used.
I kind of talked about lessons learned, you know, and there is this this idea of trying to avoid Vietnam syndrome, where we go fight a battle for someone else's freedom or to protect an ideology. Also, there are lessons learned about military leadership and what's the real story that's happening, and making sure that we don't put our American soldiers in harm's way for no good reason except for ego.
Yeah.
I mean, what are what lessons do you want people to take away from the Battle of Hue and the work that you did in this book?
To me, probably the most significant thing is I think in this country periodically we have political leadership in a sense they want to impose their idea of the way the world is, the way they think the world is, on our foreign policy, on our military. And we send young men and women now off to fight battles somehow to live out this theory of the way the world is. And in fact, I know as a journalist who's traveled all over the world my whole life, the world is infinitely complicated and a whole lot more difficult to understand than anyone who has a overarching political theory. In this case, back in the 50s and 60s, it was the monolithic spread of communism, and we had to stop its spread. Anyone who had real experience in Southeast Asia, who knew the languages, who'd lived there, knew that what was going on there was not the simplistic cartoon-like fantasy of monolithic communism taking over that country. It was a rich, fascinating culture, and there were all kinds of reasons why people were fighting, and a lot of them were very legitimate. So
in a strange way, we were there to protect that.
We were trying to, but we were doing so in the context, I think, of a fundamental misunderstanding of what was going on in that country. And I think that, we should have foreign policy and military policy grounded in in-depth understanding of the region that we're going into. We should, I think, only intervene militarily where we have vital and important national interests at stake. And we need to always have a clear objective, and we need to always have an exit plan.
I mean, one of the simple questions of this book is who won the Battle of Hue? And even when you're done with it, and even after 24 days of just vicious fighting, the North Vietnamese retreated. They left the city. The South Vietnamese flag was raised. In one case, the American flag, which was quickly taken down. But the idea that, I guess if you think about the way that a battle is done, the Americans won the battle. But who won the Battle of Hue?
The North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong, because they delivered a death blow, really, to America's ambitions in Vietnam. And while the United States kept fighting and killing for another 6 to 7 years, the die was cast. And I think today, even their victory is tainted, because what they did when they occupied Hue,
it's terrible,
purging and executing hundreds, if not thousands, of residents.
And their leaders being completely complicit as well in the way of leaving their soldiers in harm's way.
Right.
I mean, they're not at all. There's no way. And that's what I love about the book
Everybody's
wrong.
They were driven by fantasy every bit as much as Americans were. But I do think that even though they were victorious in the war, Vietnam is now united under this very authoritarian one party in this one party state. It's a deep national embarrassment and shame, the things that happened in Hue. And I don't think they've come to grips with it completely.
I will say this. Reading the book, there are times that you come to tears. I mean, just because of, you have a reaction to the way that people died for nothing.
But you also see their idealism. And, these young Americans who think they're fighting their generation's great battle and that their country has called them. And they could not have been more purely motivated.
Maybe that's part of the emotion, too.
Decently motivated.
Right.
And yet they're being led by people who shouldn't be leading them.
As someone, a writer who was 16 years old when this was going on, and it's part of your life, and you've lived in the post-Vietnam world, was it hard not to get emotional and stay objective when writing a piece like this, a book, 500 and some odd pages, about a battle that the scars have never healed?
Well, I definitely feel the emotion, but I try to bring that emotion out in the writing. So it's more clinical in my case, because I'm writing the story, and I definitely recognize, this is a very emotional moment, or this is something that ought to strike the reader as being extremely poignant or tragic or outrageous. And I try to, make sure I hit those notes hard. But, it's kind of like, I think maybe surgeons who are sort of dispassionate about cutting into bodies. I'm a little bit dispassionate about organizing prose.
Mark Bowden is the author of Hue, 1968, A Turning Point of the American War in Vietnam. He will be at the Printers Row Lit Fest tomorrow, 1 o'clock, in conversation with Michael Phillips from the Chicago Tribune at Jones High School Auditorium. Mark, pleasure to have you here. Thanks so much for the book, which is amazing, and for being my guest tonight.
It's been my pleasure, Justin, really.